Here's a scene.
Matt is right. We can't play King Lear without the king.
Backstage at a provincial theater in England during World War II, the evening's performance of King Lear is about to be canceled. The lead actor is ill. He was found wandering the streets and put in a hospital. But his dresser, the man in charge of getting him in makeup and costume, is still begging for the show to go on.
Let me go to the hospital. Let me see how he is. You never know.
I do know. I realize now that I've witnessed a slow running down. I've heard the hiss of air escaping.
That's Ian McKellen and Emily Watson starring in the BBC production of The Dresser. The actor having a breakdown, the one you hear yelling in the background there, is Anthony Hopkins. My colleague Robert Siegel takes it from here.
When Anthony Hopkins comes undone, it is a sight both disturbing and brilliant.
No more, I cannot give any more. I have nothing more to give. I want a tranquil senility. I'm an old man and you want to go on painting my face night after night after night, dressing up in clothes that are not my own. I'm not a child dressing up for charades. This is my work. This is my life's work.
As the aging actor called Sir, Hopkins loses it. He rants, he raves. Confused, he weeps. All the while, his personal assistant soothes, cajoles, and shames whatever it takes to get Sir back together and on stage for that night's performance. The Dresser runs tonight on the cable network Stars, and Anthony Hopkins joins me to talk about the play, now turned TV movie. Anthony Hopkins, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The Dresser, this may be familiar to people. The Dresser was originally a play in London in 1980. Then it became a movie in 1983 with Albert Finney and Tom Courtenay. So the play's been around for a while. What attracted you to doing it now?
Well, I thought I'd have a painless or pain-free revisit to my past, the dark nostalgia of 50 years ago when I was a young actor in the acting company of Laurence Olivier at the National Theatre. And I'd been in a few tours when I was a young kid, in 1957, a 16-week tour of the British provinces. And I was a 19-year-old kid as a stage manager, and they were the most depressing times of
yes.
my life.
You, on the subject of your salad days on stage, are completely unsentimental. Those weren't the real wonderful times that you had.
No, they were grind. Like, people say, well, you know, you've got to train, and that's true, you know, you've got to struggle from the bottom up. But I didn't want to be on the bottom. I didn't want to be struggling for the rest of my life, because it's a tough business. To be an actor, you have to be strong and tough. That's what the challenge of playing Sir in this was about.
Well, I want people to hear a bit of you as Sir playing King Lear for the 227th time.
Okay.
And giving the best performance of it ever. Let's take a listen.
You think I'll weep? No, I'll not weep. I have full cause of weeping, but this heart shall break into 100,000 flaws, or ere I'll weep.
Now, I should explain, there are scenes from Lear in The Dresser. By the way, do you know Lear? I mean, do you have to?
I know it inside out. I learned it 30 years ago, so I know it very well, you know.
I mean, there's a wonderful thing about Sir as he's losing it, and he's asking his dresser, how does it begin again? What's the plan? And he gives almost an assortment of different lines from Shakespeare.
From Richard III and Othello and Merchant of Venice and all those.
I mean, they're all in his head.
They're all stuck in there. That's his nightmare. And that's why he's beginning to have the complete mental breakdown. He's going mad because the terror of going on stage and not knowing your lines is the terror that most actors fear. I have recurring dreams to this day that I'm in a play and I don't know a single word of the play.
Really?
I still have those dreams. Once or twice a month.
When you were on stage, were you always aware of what kind of a crowd there was?
Oh, yeah. They're there to remind you all the time that you're either boring them or entertaining them.
The unwrapping of the candy you can hear pretty well on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can hear the alarm signal going off in a car because it's, outside the theatre.
Can you hear that? In New York, I've been impressed with the fact that the lobbies seem to be fairly small, and you really do hear the traffic.
They're antiquated theaters. I find them hell.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you told the New York Times some years ago that hell for you would be, and I quote, a wet Wednesday afternoon at the Old Vic, other actors would be on stage reciting verse, and I'd be standing in the wings in wrinkled tights, thinking, oh God, another endless production for the rest of eternity.
That's right. You ask any actor, you know, standing round on wet Wednesday afternoons in the Old Vic, or wherever the theatre is, with wrinkled tights, doing Shakespeare, it's, oh God. And how to get through the play without laughing. Because you get through a point and you start to laugh because you think, what am I doing with my life? So you have to keep those thoughts out of your mind.
So you managed, Anthony Hopkins, to tear yourself away from this brilliant craft on stage and become a movie actor, a film actor.
Yeah, well, I've got a life now, you know. But the principal thing I did, because I just wanted to live. I didn't want to waste a time where being screamed at late at night by some maniacal director. And I walked out. I walked out of the National Theatre because of one director. And I said, I don't need this. And they said, you're crazy. You'll walk away. You'll never work again. I said, I don't care.
Was that 1973.
1973.
They declared your career over.
And I was told, you will never work again. I said, I don't care. I'll drive a bus. I'll do anything. I don't want to be on stage being shouted at by that lunatic. And within 5 weeks, I was in the desert in Israel doing a film with Leslie Caron. And then I came over to New York by that same director, in fact, who tyrannized me. And he said, I want you to come out to New York to do Equus. And his name was John Dex. He was a great director, but he was a monster. But he was a sad, lonely guy, you know. He used to take it out on us. And I warned him, if you ever shout at me again, I'll punch you into the orchestra pit. But we had a good friendship after the end.
I think as you're speaking, theater majors across America are changing to psychology, and people that are canceling their application for the summer stock company that they're going back.
Oh, summer stock, God, yeah.
Oh, is that even worse?
Oh, God, yes. But, you know, I'm a bit of a rebel, so they mustn't take me as any gospel because I'm a badass, you know. I just enjoy acting. I enjoy what I do, but I could never suffer going through endless days doing Midsummer Night's Dream in Regent's Park or anything like that. Or what's the point of it all?
People will inevitably associate you with Hannibal Lecter, with playing Hannibal Lecter. Oh, yeah. If you were to pick the one performance you'd most like to be remembered for, what would you choose?
Well, I think this one, The Dresser, is one of the most enjoyable I've done in many, many years. The other was Remains of the Day. I've had a good time. I've had a great life as an actor. It's all been an education, the sugar pill of knowledge.
Anthony Hopkins, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
The Dresser runs tonight on Starz. And Anthony Hopkins isn't finished with King Lear. He'll star in a BBC adaptation of the play later this year, a full 3 decades since he last performed it on stage. And this time, no Wednesday matinees.